And welcome to the audio choke here at MMATorch.com. Follow MMATorch at Twitter. And also the audio choke at Twitter, but just audio choke. All right, that went really well.
I'm Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
And I'm Matt Collins. All right, let's... the Ultimate Fighter 10 finale was on Saturday, and it was along with a marathon of the season's episodes. How'd it do?
Brain melting.
Yeah, it was all right. It wasn't exactly what it lived up to and everything, particularly the Kimbo Slice and Houston Alexander fight, which was not as advertised at all.
Which I think, in my opinion, actually made it more entertaining. They went to a 3-round decision, which I don't think anyone in the entire universe predicted would happen.
Yeah, that fight was supposed to be a slugfest, and I think what actually happened is probably both fighters were scared out of their minds, and they kind of took it in different ways. Houston Alexander was dancing around. He was dancing around. He was trying to do something that he's not really capable of doing, and that's being a technician. He spent like 2 minutes circling around Kimbo before the first punch was thrown, and he was kind of flicking kicks around, and Kimbo was going for the ground the whole time, which ended up being better than the kicks.
And none of Houston Alexander's fights from the UFC have gone on longer than one round.
That's correct. They're usually pretty brutal knockouts on his part, or pretty much just getting embarrassed on the ground.
Which kind of happened again with Kimbo. Two Kimbo Slice, of all people.
Yeah, the more embarrassing that Kimbo, who is not renowned at all for his ground game, and was able to take him down multiple times and make him look bad, even while Kimbo himself was not doing great. I mean, he tried for a couple of submissions, but they were poorly applied. But just the fact that Kimbo Slice, YouTube Street Fighter, is going for submissions was enough to... I gleaned great entertainment value from that.
Now, Houston Alexander was the one with everything to lose in this fight.
Because
he has the rep there at UFC, while Kimbo, well, you go ahead, Tobin.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, Houston Alexander had already kind of lost some of his shine. I mean, he got a lot of attention when he knocked out Keith Jardine. But, I mean, he's had some bad losses since then, and he actually left the UFC for a time and was brought back for this fight, and I can't imagine after the showing he had, he's going to be coming back for another fight at all in the UFC anytime soon. I mean, he was basically brought in to showcase, not showcase Kimbo, but be a good matchup for Kimbo Slice. They were both, you know, touted heavy strikers without much else to offer, and he didn't even do too well in that department on Saturdays.
Yeah, I was very much disappointed in Houston in this, not because he lost, but because he didn't go with his usual rowdy gorilla style, which is... You know, this is what I want to see from him. I don't want to see him stick and move. I want to see him just, you know, go crazy and grab the guy's head and, you know, bring his knee up to it. And he didn't really do a whole lot of that. So that fight was pretty disappointing to me.
Pretty interesting strategy, though, with the leg kicks to Kimbo's arthritic knee.
Yeah,
thank you to the Ultimate Fighter for letting me know.
It was surprising to see Alexander working that at the beginning, and, you know, they didn't seem too effective right away because they sent in pretty light kicks, but eventually was able to, he actually knocked Kimbo down with a leg kick. Was that in the third round? It was pretty late into the match.
Yeah, it was the third round. It was about 2 minutes left in the fight when that happened.
Yeah. So, I mean, it appeared to be a strategy that had some success, but... Yeah, it's just...
It didn't work out. He didn't follow through with it.
He didn't follow through. I mean, when he knocked Kimbo down, I thought he might have been in trouble there, and it didn't work out. Kimbo was actually able to somewhat get up and to get another takedown on him, but I was just kind of surprised. And, you know, I love technical fights where it is like someone sticking and moving, but when you expect one thing and you get something else, I wouldn't say I was disappointed. I was just really surprised and kind of like... everyone I was watching with just really put out their element seeing that fight. And eventually, we found it very entertaining, especially the second round. But just like the idea that these two guys who, all of their fights have been very quick, very, you know, heavy-handed, went the complete opposite way. It was just like really shocking, literally.
Will we see Houston Alexander fight again in the UFC?
I don't think anytime soon, no.
Yeah, he's going to have to string together a lot of wins before he comes back.
And who else can Kimbo Slice beat?
There's the question.
Yeah, Kimbo is in kind of a weird spot in the UFC because he's a moneymaker. I mean, people are going to pay to see him. So the UFC wants to keep him around, but he's not good enough to beat anyone that's got a good name, and he's too old to build them up slowly. They can't be spending time putting him up against all these, you know, guys that are just going to help him work his skills, because he's like 37 or something. You know, he's already pretty much over the hill. And, you know, if they throw him at the Wolves, he's just going to get destroyed. I mean, there's no way he's going to be able to fight guys like Junior Dos Santos or Shane Carwin or Brock Lesnar. That would be ridiculous. He fought Roy Nelson and, you know, got embarrassed by him. Roy Nelson is good. You know, he's the tough champ now, but, you know, he's not quite on the championship level. And, you know, Kimbo is several notches below him.
Yeah, I could see him maybe fighting a few other guys who were on the Ultimate Fighter heavyweight season with him, maybe. But yeah, when it comes to people already established in the UFC, there's not a lot for him to do. I mean, he was, you know, honestly, I was impressed by the skills he had picked up in his 3 months since the show wrapped taping. He'd been training with American Top Team.
Mm-hmm.
So he did pick up some good skills. And yeah, me and I was watching it over a friend's house. Everyone was really impressed that, well, he's actually going for takedowns. And even though, again, the submissions were ugly, not something you're expecting to see from him. So, I mean, he had some improvement, but, like Greg was mentioning, I think it's too little, too late. So it'd be interesting to see, maybe some point down the road they could maybe sell a rematch with Roy Nelson. But, yeah, I'd expect him to fight lower-tier heavyweights or some other casts off from the show.
Well, a big disappointment for me in that night of fights was the Marcus Jones and Matt Mitrione. I'm disappointed that the Ultimate Fighter neglected to tell me how pathetic Marcus Jones' stand-up was.
Well, you know, they don't want to lose the value of a fighter by telling you he might lose horribly.
That's true. And then also this match had the had a little bit more of a spectacular to it. They had a little bit of a feud going during the show.
Yeah, Matt Mitrione did a lot of talking during that season. You know, he had stuff to say all the time that was just pissing everybody off. And, you know, Marcus was one of the people that he was talking about. And later on in the season, Matt Mitrione had injured Scott Junk with an inadvertent eye poke. You know, it's not like he was doing anything, like he was trying to hurt him. It's something that happens in fights. But Marcus got all up in his grill.
Turned out to be one of the best scenes I thought from
really
the Ultimate.
Freaked out.
That was also pretty funny when Rashad and all those guys get in there and he's crying afterwards, like, Scott Junk may not fight no more.
Yeah,
torn retina.
He's a very emotional fellow, and it goes both ways. And for most of the show, they kind of showed how he was a very sensitive big man, and but this one he just went full on rage.
Yes.
On Matt Mitrione about concern for a friend's well-being. But,
I think I'd be happier in future seasons if they focused more on the fighters' techniques and everything, though, instead of just their emotional personality.
Well, that's always been the issue with The Ultimate Fighter, is because it is a reality TV show, and it kind of acts as a bridge from people who are like, I don't want to watch no guys in cage punching each other. It's a good bridge because it is reality TV, and they're like, oh, and they fight too, and then maybe down the road they'll actually end up getting more interested in the fights themselves. But yeah, I mean, The Ultimate Fighter's really, I don't think, ever been too focused on like the actual techniques or the first couple seasons they did show a lot of the training, but it's always kind of been about personalities and, you know, for better or worse, you know.
But also, one thing, you know, that helps people get interested in the fights is knowing who to cheer for and who to, you know, who they like and who they don't like. And we all had the guy in that fight who we wanted to like. Not because he was the better of the two fighters, but, you know, he was the likable, sweet guy. And Matt Mitrione was the guy who was crazy as hell and was always talking smack. So, you know, it helps us get emotionally invested in fights, and us being people who are, you know, watching everything, we may not need to get as emotionally invested in fights. We can get excited about fights just because, ooh, you know, there's a couple of good guys fighting. But your average person who's watching the show, you know, they want to know who to like, and they want to know why they want that guy to win.
Yeah, definitely helps for sure. I agree with that. It's just, you know, like you were mentioning, Matt, just when it comes to like getting to know the technical side of things, or like what this fighter's good at and stuff, aside from like a 10-second soundbite right before the fight, there's not necessarily a lot you learn.
Speaking about personalities and average people just looking at fighters and what their opinions of them are, Roy Nelson, the new Ultimate Fighter, where do you think he stands in UFC now? Besides a great win and a bright future. But this is a guy that almost seems untrainable, didn't have much to do with the Ultimate Fighter, and, of course, coming out to... He's fat.
Yeah, Weird Al. That was fun. On the TV show, I think he may have been a victim of bad editing, because on the TV show, God, I hated him so much. Just watching him, just everything he did just made me mad. But, you know, he won the fight, and he was cracking some jokes about Burger King, and, you know, he came out to fat. He seemed like a lot more likable guy. So it may just be that, you know, he got a pretty sweet knockout, but, you know, he could have been a victim of bad editing. Given that he is far more experienced than most winners of the Ultimate Fighter have, you know, he's fought Andrei Arlovsky, and he held his own in that fight. I could see him fighting some pretty big guys. A lot of times these guys who win the show, they get built up slowly, you know, like Diego Sanchez, winner of season one, is just now getting a title shot. But I could see Roy Nelson fighting some big guys soon. You know, he could be fighting Chet Congo.
Yeah, that one does... I could see that happening down the road. Yeah, I mean, really, two things I never thought I'd see in the UFC is a Weird Al song uses entrance music and Kimbo Slice going to a three-round decision. But, yeah, Roy Nelson, I think he's got some potential. And you mentioned, Matt, him appearing uncoachable on the show. And like Greg mentioned, yeah, the possibility of the editing. It's a reality show. They always want to have their heroes and villains of the season. But also mentioned was his experience compared to a lot of the people on the show. I mean, he's been around the game for a while. He's not, like, just recently been introduced to MMA. He knows what he's doing. So I could see how that definitely, and it did come across on the show, that he didn't want to take really too much advice from anyone. And maybe that will be detrimental, and there's always going to be talk about his belly, as it were. And, you know, I mean, he's a great fighter, and he does well with the weight he has, but it's just one of those things, how much better could he be if he went and, you know, worked on some other aspects of the game that he hasn't been willing to go at right now.
And Joe Rogan brought up a great point about how his stomach can kind of be a weight and help him out during fights.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, size always helps. I mean, you think of fat, and it's not making him stronger, but if a big guy is on top of you, you're burning a lot of energy trying to get him off you. And, you know, Roy Nelson, he got that spectacular knockout, but he likes to be on the ground for most of the fights. I've seen him do a takedown all the time. And, you know, you got that big old belly on you. I mean, how are you going to get the moon off of you?
How are you? Did Roy's experience beat Brendan Schaub?
Brendan Schaub, actually. But
pardon me.
No worries. I get that wrong every time myself until I hear someone else get it wrong. Then
all right, podcast's over. We're done.
No worries. Yeah, I mean, I think the experience really played a role. And, you know, there's always the... always discussion about, like, you know, the first time at the big show, you know, whether that affects your nerves or anything like that. But yeah, I think Roy Nelson handled himself well against Schaub, and yeah, just really his background seemed to help. But you know, that's not to say, I guess, that Schaub didn't do well. Yeah, I think he acquitted himself quite nicely in that fight, and showed off some good stand-up, at least. And, you know, he was able to get up off the ground as well and everything. So I think that helped. But, I mean, I believe it was mentioned on the show even. But the punch he took that was the knockout by Roy Nelson, that would put anyone down. That's not like that was a rookie mistake by Schaub, or that, like, that's an indication that he has a bad chin or anything like that. I mean, he got hit right on the right by the ear, and that's going to put most people down. So, but, yeah, I'd say the experience is really a big... point there that made the difference. But I think Schaub's got a good future, I would think.
Yeah, one other thing about Schaub is he's undefeated, and as a general rule, I never trust undefeated fighters. A lot of times they just kind of have this sense of immortality, like they can't be beaten, and he definitely seemed to have that going on the show. And I'm not saying that he took the fight lightly or anything, but you know, he got put in the bad position, he got out of the bad position, and he's up, and then, you know, all of a sudden it's his game, and bam, down he goes. I think he may have been caught by surprise. I think that Roy Nelson is probably the better fighter as of now, but I don't think that Brendan was ready for it.
Yeah, but I mean, he's still a rather young guy, and I think he's got... I could see the UFC keeping him around, because, I mean, like I said, he didn't look bad in that fight. I mean, he got his clock cleaned at the end with a really solid punch.
Matt Hamill and John Jones.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was hard to watch. John Jones is a monster, and he was destroying Matt Hamill until the illegal elbows came in. And, you know, he was looking up at the ref like, hey, why are you not stopping this fight yet? And, you know, some of it was iffy. He was defending himself. You know, there's kind of a unwritten rule sometimes where you throw enough punches at a guy that you're in a good enough position on, and they'll stop it. But it's not like Hamill was sleeping. It's not like he wasn't blocking stuff. He was still working. And, you know, John was just, he was pleading to the ref. He was trying to get it stopped. And when he threw those elbows, at first I thought it was going to be a TKO. But that was the first time they had done the instant replay. And they realized that it was actually the elbow itself that did the move, or did the broken nose.
Yeah, and ended up basically ending the fight. So yeah, because there was actually some contention over that, and obviously John Jones was surprised by the result when they announced it. Sounds like that was the first time he had heard it.
And, but that's an illegal move, though.
Right. And I don't think the idea that it was
six position.
Right, the 12-6 downward elbow strike. I don't think the idea that that was an illegal strike was a surprise to John Jones. I think he just kind of lost his head for a moment or two. But when they announced it as a disqualification loss, because in other situations like an eye poke or a shot to the groin, those are usually end, if a fighter can't continue, those will usually end in a no contest. But it's because the illegal strike actually resulted in ending the match, and they were clearly deliberate, even though one could say they perhaps weren't necessarily malicious. Maybe, but where you have like a groin strike, those are usually accidental, as are the eye pokes. So I think it has a lot to do with kind of the intent around the foul. And,
yeah.
And actually, a lot of times the fouls that are accidental can end up being a TKO with victory for the guy who does the move. Anthony Johnson got poked in the eyes like 5 times by Kevin Burns.
So badly.
And yeah, the last time he needed surgery on his eye, it was so bad. And he ended up losing the fight by eye poke TKO, which is pretty ridiculous. So I'm glad they added this rule, but it sucks for John Jones that he's the first guy that it gets enforced on. But he seems to have a really good attitude about it. You know, he went in there and said, hey, you know, I screwed up, and cool, the pressure's off me. I'm not undefeated anymore. I don't have to win my next fight.
The almighty Joe Rogan seemed to have been questioning that should be an illegal move at all.
Yeah, that's always kind of the many joys of watching fights with commentary, and not to say that Joe Rogan was wrong or anything, but you always get the... and there's a lot of rules that are different, even between organizations, and you look back to the old Pride days, you could soccer kick an opponent's head while they were on the ground, and, you know, or knee to the head on a ground opponent, that sort of thing. So there's always going to be those issues of, like, well, should this move be legal, should it not be? And, you know, I'm not sure where I stand on that. I don't think those are necessarily like the death blows that they've been made out to be, the downward elbow strike necessarily. So, yeah, who knows? And I don't know if it'll change or anything like that, but it's definitely another element of the game.
Just another rule, so that neither one of you are overly opposed to it?
Yeah, I mean, oh, go ahead.
It's one of the rules that's been around since the sport got commissioned. The UFC doesn't actually make the rules. It's the state athletic commissions that do it, and they pretty much all have the same rules. I believe it was New Jersey that made the first set of them, and all the other states have gone by these unified rules. So basically what New Jersey said has gone, and there's been some attempts to change some rules. Big John, since he retired from refereeing, has been lobbying, trying to make it so that knees to the head on the ground would be legal, because he feels that that's not super dangerous and it can open up a fight in certain ways. Unlike head stomps on the ground, where it's just like, that's not going to change a fight. That's just going to be a spectacular way to finish somebody who's already sleeping.
Yeah. Just ask Wes Sims.
Yeah, but some of these guys are going to be, you know, they're going to be disqualified by a rule that, you know, I don't see it as being the worst rule in the world, but I don't see it as being super necessary either. Mm-hmm.
Any other fights of choice from the Ultimate Fighter 10 finale?
You know, I'm trying to think. You know, just really quick, one last thing on the Jones thing for sure. You know, I thought it was interesting because, you know, a lot of the times those fights like that where it ends in an EQ, there's, you know, you have a lot of controversy surrounding it. And even though this was kind of a disappointment, I don't think there's necessarily a lot of controversy around it because, you know, some fights you're like, oh, well, this guy was clearly winning the fight until the illegal strike. And that changed it or whatever. And in this fight, Jones was clearly dominating the fight. And while the downward elbows did end the fight, I don't think many people, especially finding out that Hamill had a bad arm after the fight, were going to think that he was going to be able to turn the course of the fight. So
yeah, but he didn't get the W though. That will probably be lost to time. I mean, still going to turn up as a loss.
Yeah, I think everyone loses in that situation, unfortunately.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's one of those things where even though he did officially get the loss, I don't think he's the one whose stock dropped. You know, he went out there and he took a solid guy and he destroyed him. You know, Matt Hamill isn't undefeated, or he wasn't, you know, but the losses that he did have were, they were decision losses. I can't recall him being put away, but, you know, man, Jones just went in there and he made him look like he was nothing. So even though he did get the loss, Dana White saw that, you know, Dana White saw what he did and he's going to be getting a better fighter next.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, just ask Shogun Hua, you know, you can have a loss on your record and still come out better from the fight. Yeah, the other one, you know, Frankie Edgar and Matt Veitch, you were saying that was fight of the night?
Fight of the night, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good fight, and I mean, that puts Frankie Edgar in a pretty good spot, because I believe his last fight he beat Sean Sherk, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a big win.
So, yeah, he's got some impressive wins and on his record now, so potentially good things in his future, depending how the rest of the division shakes out for him.
They kind of have a logjam going on there for the 155 belt, though. BJ is fighting Diego next week, and you know, Gray Maynard's definitely up there too. And Gray Maynard, for all practical purposes, undefeated, other than to Nate Diaz, on the season 5 of The Ultimate Fighter. But he's torn through everyone, and he did beat Frank Edgar head-to-head. So he's probably going to get the title shot first, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, I feel bad for Titties. He's going to be Titties forever, and he's going to go fight for this country. And
his army friends are going to make fun of him.
Yeah. So.
And if I know anything about army guys, he's not going to live that one down at all.
Yeah. But yeah, Daryl Schoonover. I mean, it wasn't a horrible fight, but yeah, he just got rocked there at the end, and clearly put away by James McSweeney. So
you're inside the Audio Choke at MMATorch.com, MMATorch at Twitter, Audio Choke at Twitter. Go to the forum, leave a comment, hopefully a positive one. Tobin's really sensitive. Shh.
Neurotic. I'd go with the term neurotic.
The Ultimate Fighter 11, coaches, gentlemen.
Chuck Liddell.
And Tito.
Woo! The fireworks are going to be going off like crazy.
They're going to fight again. Tito's probably going to lose again.
You know, Chuck has dropped a lot. I don't see Tito doing a stand-up knockout or anything, but Chuck of 2009 is not Chuck of 2006.
But
so
he's got all that Dancing with the Stars experience now. He's probably more agile.
Quick on his feet, huh?
Yeah, that's true. That might help him with a sprawl game. So, you know, it's hard to say. I don't see why anyone would bet on Tito. That would be pretty silly. But
yeah, his stand-up, as demonstrated against Forrest Griffin, has not improved much since he last fought. And, you know, Chuck is older now and not nearly as quick, but I still think he has good enough defensive wrestling and still has the one-punch power, despite the fact that those punches probably come at a much slower rate now. As far as the season goes, I'm sure that's going to be a very... Tito Ortiz makes for good reality TV. We'll say that.
To say the least.
Yeah, and Chuck might not have the most charisma on the planet, but I think when put against Tito on TV, I think he'll probably end up looking much like Dan Henderson looked against Michael Bisping, where you have one person who's so clearly more outrageous and outgoing, and the other person can kind of just be a foil for that. So,
and actually, on the coaching side, both guys made pretty effective coaches on their seasons of The Ultimate Fighter in the past. Liddell on season 1 and Tito on season 3, both of them pretty much got all their guys to advance. So it might be a pretty competitive season. Also, I kind of like the thing that they're doing here, where they're matching two older guys that aren't quite as relevant anymore, as opposed to what they've done a lot recently, where they've had champion and contender fighting, and that just logjams the division for an entire year. Like with Nogueira and Mir, for example, it's just like, there was the interim heavyweight champion and the number one contender, and it's just like, they both fought in January, or maybe February, and then they both fought again in December. It's just like, why are you going to hold up a title that long? Instead, I like them getting some name guys, some guys that people will recognize. And, you know, it doesn't matter that Chuck Liddell is not going to fight anytime soon. It doesn't matter that Tito is not going to fight anytime soon, because nobody's really that excited to see them fight right now anyway.
Right, I mean, you know, they're legends in the sport, but they're certainly not what one would call, relevant fighters, or at the top of their divisions anymore, where, like, they're right there in the mix anymore. Either one of them want to put together another run, they need a few solid wins, not just, it's not like anyone's chomping at the bit to see them fight for a title anytime soon. So I think that's a good call, having them coach, and
a very well-coached season, perhaps.
Yeah, they're not going to be no Rampage Jackson, so hopefully the advice will be better than get up. Don't let him do that.
He's got titties.
Yeah, titties. That was a pretty sweet pep talk, though, I will say.
Yeah. Remember, man, he's got titties.
Yeah. But I do like, Greg, that you brought up the point that they're actually good coaches, and that is, Matt, you were mentioning earlier, you were concerned about they're not being the technical aspects shown in the Ultimate Fighter, and I'm sure much of that will again be glossed over, what with Tito's antics on the show, perhaps. But it'll be nice to know that they are the fighters there are actually getting higher quality training. Not to say that the other coaches were bad or anything like that, but people who have proven themselves to be good coaches.
Penn versus Sanchez, UFC 107, December 12th at the FedEx Forum in Memphis, Tennessee. Have your tickets?
Yeah, I'll be there. Like we said last week, Diego is capable of winning this fight, but I couldn't tell you how he would do it. BJ Penn, on paper, has everything. But, you know, Diego Sanchez has a way of winning fights, too. So
also, he's crazy.
Yeah, well, they're both kind of crazy in their own way.
Yeah, I guess BJ Penn does have that one highlight of him licking the blood of his enemies off of his gloves after a fight.
Over and over again, we'll be seeing that.
Which is classic. But yeah, Diego Sanchez has the crazy eyes, and you can't discount that. And I mean, that really just goes, you know, we make fun of it, but I mean, he does have a great competitive attitude when it comes to his training and his fights. They just manifest themselves in goofy, angry eyes. So, I'm excited for the fight, and I fully expect BJ to win. I wouldn't be disappointed if it went the other way, or surprised necessarily, but I expect BJ to be keeping his belt.
Frank Mir, Czech Congo.
Woo!
Exciting match?
It could be. It could be.
What could happen?
I think that this fight is probably going to be pretty quick, but I also thought the same thing about Kimbo and Houston Alexander, so I could be completely off on this. But I expect this one to be inside the first round, probably inside the first half of the first round. Because Frank Mir is known for aggressive, just take down, break the arm. And Chet Congo is the perfect guy to do that to. He's great standing up. He hits like a son of a bitch, but he's got bad takedown defense. And he hasn't really shown that he can survive submissions, but he hasn't really gone up against any submission guys either.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, we talked on the last episode about, Mir's kind of gotten the idea in his head that he's got good stand-up, and it's definitely vastly improved since when he first started off in the sport, but compared to a striker like Congo, if he decides to try and trade with Congo for too long, he could find himself in trouble. So I expect if it's going to go Mir's way, he's going to go for a takedown and get a submission fairly quickly. I think maybe the second round. I'd have to be a little contrary, but who knows. I fully expect, not fully expect, but I would expect Frank Mir to be more likely to win this fight with submission than any other way. And but Congo's definitely got a good chance of knocking him the crap out if he decides to stand with him. So
sounds reasonable. John Fitch, Mike Pierce.
That is, those are some good fighters. John Fitch has always been at the top of the division. Unfortunately, he got blasted by George St. Pierre. So in their last fight together. So he's got that on his record, but who hasn't been made to look bad by George St. Pierre? But John Fitch is very, very solid, and I think he's probably going to take this and hopefully work his way back up to another title shot. Who knows how long it will take? The UFC tends to not be willing to pull the trigger on rematches for fighters who have, John Fitch didn't look bad against GSP. He just got beat soundly. So when something like that happens, the UFC is probably not going to give him a quick rematch.
I see John Fitch in a pretty similar situation to Sean Sherk in that he's kind of like the gatekeeper to the stars. He's not the best guy, but he's really close up there, and he can beat just about anyone. And if you beat him, then you deserve a title shot. I don't think Mike Pierce is going to be that guy, though. So I think John Fitch is going to put him away.
Kenny Florian, Clay Guida.
Go ahead, Greg.
This is an interesting fight. Kenny Florian is a great jiu-jitsu guy, and that's how he started out. And over the years, he's picked up a really good Muay Thai game. I noticed on the commercial for UFC 107, they're actually calling him Muay Thai expert Kenny Florian now, not jiu-jitsu expert, which was pretty funny to me. Clay Guida fights at a frantic pace. He's like the Energizer Bunny. He just keeps bouncing around and getting in your face, and he's got great wrestling. I could see this very likely being a situation where Clay Guida tries to keep it a wrestling match the whole time, kind of like how he did against Mac Danzig and Nate Diaz, where he, you know, keeps them from working their stand-up game, but also kind of keeps them from working their jiu-jitsu game. Not really aggressive in terms of finishing the fight, but in terms of doing some damage, like, you know, shots to the body and stuff like that, not trying to put them away, but just being in their face and working them. I could see him pulling off an upset here.
Yeah, I mean, Guido's definitely got a shot in an upset for sure. We talked before about his kind of unexpendable energy reserves. He seems to really be able to outpace most of his opponents, and as part of his strategy, obviously, is to have much better cardio than anyone else he faces, but also just be able to use that to his advantage in wearing down an opponent, whether it's holding them up against the cage and working for a takedown for a while or whatever. Because technically speaking, I mean, he doesn't have great stand-up or anything like that. He can throw. We saw him weather a pretty substantial storm early against Diego Sanchez and was able to make that a fight, although he clearly lost. Guida's got a shot, but Florian much more, I'd say, technical. And let's not forget he has super pointy elbows. So
yeah, he can cut people really good with those things. I think he actually had razors implanted into those things. Because I've never seen anyone cut people up like that. When he fought Chris Lieben on The Ultimate Fighter, he only had a shot or two, and he had something like 17 stitches in his face because of that.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And he's become much more well-rounded since then. People kind of tend to forget about that. But yeah, I mean, he's really come a long way technically, so I think he's got a pretty good shot to take this, I would say.
Any more UFC 107 fights you guys want to mention?
You know, I'm looking through the list. I mean, Alan Belcher's always kind of fun to watch. Not like that necessarily has any big implications down the road, but he's a fun character.
He's kind of jumped out of nowhere recently. He was around for a while, but he wasn't really a guy that I was looking for. But then all of a sudden he beat up Dennis King, who came from Pride, and was looking like a top prospect. And, Alan Belcher caught him in the second round, I believe. And then he fought Akiyama at UFC 100 and fought to a really close decision. I actually gave it to him, but the judges didn't. But he's a guy who's definitely improved his game, and I could see him working his way up the ladder.
Yeah, and hopefully, I believe he pulled off a flip once. Someone had him in a standing choke, I believe, at one point, and he basically flipped forward, and it didn't actually help, but it looked really cool. So he's got that going for him. But yeah, he's an exciting fighter to watch, and who knows where he'll go from here. But another good opportunity. I was excited. Paul Buontello's fighting, and he was originally going to be fighting, I believe, Todd Duffy. I think.
Yeah.
But Duffy, who's only had one fight in the UFC, but it was the quickest knockout in the UFC, and he looked very impressive in his 8 seconds of fighting so far. But he pulled out with an injury, so now Buontello's going to be fighting that Stefan Struve. That could be a good fight. Stefan Struve is the outrageously tall, skinny.
Yeah, he's in like 6'11" or some crazy number like
Whoa.
That. And I caught his last fight, and he won by triangle choke, and it was a pretty good one. So, you know, it got taken away a little bit because I would have liked to see Duffy last more than 7 seconds. But you know, who knows? It could have been another really short fight. Arlovsky managed to put Buontello away with one punch once also.
Oof, yeah.
So, this should be fun to see also. I'm not horribly disappointed, but I would have liked to see Duffy, and I hope he comes back soon.
You're inside the audio choke with the latest news about Dan Henderson that was released yesterday, December 7th.
Yeah, he's signed up with Strikeforce.
That's an exciting move. I think it's really one of the first top UFC fighters to turn down a UFC contract. I believe he was up for renewal and go with a competing organization.
Yeah, I think this one really hurts the UFC. Not that Dan Henderson was the biggest draw, but, you know, the UFC invested a fair amount in them. They put a season of The Ultimate Fighter. They gave him that show against Michael Bisping, and he knocked his head off. It was one of the best knockouts I'd seen in quite some time. So, you know, he was certainly highly regarded. He could arguably be the number two welter, or well, middleweight in the world. And to see him jump ship like that, that's a big deal. And, you know, he says his money has a little bit to do with it, but he's more offended that he didn't get the title shot.
Yeah, he was really looking for that rematch with Anderson Silva. And, you know, he arguably had earned it, but the UFC was going to at least have him fight one more time before giving him another shot. You know, and he was upset about basically being jumped in line for that shot. And so, you know, I think there's some validity there. It still doesn't sound like there's a lot of bad blood necessarily between Henderson and the UFC, just so much as, you know, there's a couple things that were bothersome and, you know, the money issues and health. He wanted a bit more money, which you can't blame him for. And, you know, honestly, going to Strikeforce, you could get a lot more exposure now that they've got the potential to be on CBS a couple times a year.
He did actually say the word CBS in an interview I read. So I think that has a lot to do with it. Being on Channel 11, it's a big deal.
Channel 11 here in Anchorage, Alaska. Check your local listings. What is for Dan Henderson at Strikeforce besides a little bit more money, a little bit more exposure, network TV? Yeah. What's for him, fight-wise?
Well, it depends where he wants to fight. I mean, he's fought at both middleweight and light heavyweight, and I believe back in Pride he had both belts at the same time, which was pretty dang impressive.
Jake Shields comes to mind. Now, he is the middleweight champion of Strikeforce.
Yes, he just won that against Mayhem Miller a few weeks ago. And, you know, honestly, at watching that fight and seeing what I know about Dan Henderson, I see no reason why Dan would lose that fight.
Right. It would be a good fight. I take back the entertaining. It might not be entertaining. Jake Shields is very technically sound on the ground, but he might not necessarily make for the most entertaining fighter. But, you know, when you have a middleweight, top middleweights, they should fight. And, yeah, Jake Shields does not have the best stand-up in the world, and Dan Henderson, while not necessarily super technically savvy when it comes to boxing, has, as we've noted, a rather powerful right hand.
Now, what would happen if he went up to heavyweight, which he can?
Well, he could go up to heavyweight, but first, I think he would be more likely to go to light heavyweight in between at 205. And there's not really a whole lot stopping him from taking that belt either. There's Gegard Mousasi, who has been looking like a monster lately, and that would be a good fight. But other than that, I don't see a whole lot of people stopping him. He's training partners with Sokaju, so I don't think that fight would happen.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, that would be a fun one to see, but Henderson trains him. Yeah. And I don't really know that they have a whole lot of other, you know, high-level light heavyweights. There's Babalu, who, you know, is Chuck's doormat. So I don't see why that would stop Dan Henderson. Dan Henderson could easily, well, I shouldn't say easily, because nobody easily does it, but I could see it very possible that Dan Henderson takes two titles there in Strikeforce.
It'd be interesting. Yeah, the Mousasi bout is kind of the one that I'd be most interested in as far as, I guess, relevance goes in that division, just because Henderson's among some of the better fighters in light, either of their divisions, honestly, but among light heavyweight fighters, and Mousasi's making a name for himself, fighting some very quality, or having some very quality wins. Other than that, yeah, I'm actually looking down Strikeforce's, you know, 205 roster, and mentioned Babalu and Sokaju. Apparently they also have Kevin Randleman.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm not sure how many people would be interested in that fight. I mean, Randleman used to be a name, but he's never been that great of a fighter. The other one to look out for is King Mo the Wall, who's really more of a prospect at this point, but he just recently signed with Strikeforce. And I'm not actually sure. He might actually, I don't think he's a training partner, but, you know, who knows how that would go. But he's still working his way up. He's not, I don't think he's ready for a shot against the top of the divisions, the division right now. But, you know, I could see down the line maybe Dan Henderson, King Mo fighting.
Yeah, Henderson's looking at pretty much walking into title shots here. He's definitely got that kind of clout. Where he can walk in, he can sign up like he did and just be like, "Yo, I want a belt."
Yeah, and that's kind of an interesting thing. He wouldn't need the warm up fights. And you know, one of the points I've read in several interviews with him that he brings up is he had a highlight reel knockout on the most watched UFC pay per view of all time. So that, you know, before people might not have known who Dan Henderson was, he has the argument that people, a lot more people are aware of him now. And so he brings that clout on top of his outstanding record with him.
Sounds kind of full of himself.
Well, I don't know if he's full so much as confident. And, you know, you watch interviews with him. I don't think he's a cocky guy, but he is very confident in his abilities and, you know, at least very aware of what was going on. And, you know, he's got a point. You know, highlight reel knockouts are weigh a lot more in the fans' minds than, a war of attrition over five rounds or something like that. People remember the big heavy hitters for sure.
Right on. War of attrition. Yeah, award for best sentence goes to you today.
Yeah.
UFC 108. The match. The fight.
The match.
Talk.
Junior Dos Santos is now going to be fighting Gilbert Ivel, which kind of upsets me because, I thought UFC was going to be above bringing Ivel into the into their promotion. Gilbert Ivel is pretty much hands down the dirtiest fighter in the history of mixed martial arts. He gouges eyes, he kicks balls, he knocked out a ref once because he didn't like the ref's call. I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be said for, you know, giving someone a second chance. And, you know, you see interviews with Ivel, and he doesn't come across as, like, you know, the scheming, nefarious, like, you know, twisting his mustache, you know, type of villain. But, I mean, you watch it, you've seen some of his fights and some of the ways they go. And, you know, even if they were not intentional, some of the ways his fights have gone, you're like, this guy's a pretty big risk. But, I mean, that's not to say he's not a horrible fighter, but I expect it not to go his way when the fight comes together.
Yeah, I would think that he is probably going to lose, but he is an outstanding kickboxer, and he's got the knockout power, and there's never a fight that you can say with confidence he's going to lose, because he's always got that chance. He's always, you know, he can put anyone away, but I would expect Dos Santos to put him away, especially after the destruction of Crow Cop and, you know, some of these other wins that Dos Santos has been putting together. He's looking like a world beater. I don't know what kind of ground game he has, because he's done a good job of just, you know, mauling people standing up. But Ivel is known for not really having much of a ground game, so if Dos Santos feels so inclined, he could bring the fight to the ground and probably finish it there.
Rampage Jackson's going to finish his UFC contract.
That's what he blogged, right?
Yeah.
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 Good to hear.
Straight from the horse's mouth, man.
Yeah, yep.
He's had a lot of drama with the UFC lately. He said that he was done with fighting because Dana White was talking some smack. And, you know, Dana White just talks about everyone like that. But it's interesting to me to see how much Rampage's heart is going to be into this. He seems like he wants to aspire to be an actor more than a fighter. I don't know that he's going to get a whole lot of roles. I would think that playing Mr. T would be it's the role that he was born to play, but I don't know that there's going to be a whole lot of great roles for a guy like Rampage. As far as I know, he can't act. He might surprise us all and be an incredible actor, but I wouldn't expect it. I think he's a better fighter than an actor, and that's why I hope he's not just saying, like, yeah, I'll finish my contract because I'm tied to a contract and I gotta. I hope he's, like, you know, legitimately wanting to continue fighting. And he says that he's going to finish out his contract and then, you know, maybe I'll box once a year to keep in shape. And I really hope that doesn't materialize. I'd like to see him get in there and fight Rashad Evans, and really want to fight Rashad Evans, not just fight Rashad Evans because that's what he's got to do. Because if he does that, then he's going to lose.
Yeah, man, because, you know, it kind of gets lost in all the drama and, you know, even the hype of the show. But Evans versus Rampage Jackson should be a good fight, just from a, you know, looking at their styles and that sort of thing. I'd say they're pretty close when it comes to, you know, skill-wise, and they both offer, Rampage has got pretty good boxing, and Rashad Evans has shown he's got the good wrestling, and he's shown he's got some heavy hands as well. So I think that when that fight finally comes together, good things will be in store for fans.
Anything you guys want to talk about before we have our last piece?
We'll take the awkward silence as probably not.
All right, excellent. All right, who wants to tackle this one?
Yeah, I'll go for it. War Machine, is going crazy.
He's nuts.
As if he wasn't crazy enough as it was.
Let's talk about War Machine the man first. Let's give it a little history.
War Machine was brought to our attention in the sixth season of The Ultimate Fighter. He was on Team Sarah, and he was that guy that Team Sarah just kept calling a freaking knucklehead. You know, this guy was, Sarah said he's got all the tools, he's strong, he's fast, he's got the skills, but God, when that guy starts talking, he's wanting to carry fake grenades onto airplanes and stuff just because it's part of my belt, man, that's how I look. And,
So that's where we first met War Machine when he was still named a human name.
Yes, John Copenhaver or whatever the heck it was, and he won his fight on the finale. It wasn't the final matchup. He lost to Tommy Spear in the first round, but he won his fight, and then he lost another fight and got kicked out of the UFC. And he had some sort of crazy blog after that fight about how he wanted to die in a knife fight in the Philippines before the age of 50 in a bar. Some pretty weird stuff.
Yeah, his internet rants are pretty far out there. Definitely good material for a movie, I would say, just some of the stuff he goes on about. And he got in trouble for some talk about, after Evan Tanner passed away, War Machine perhaps made some inappropriate comments on his blog or on his Twitter account surrounding that and got him in some hot water. But he's proven himself to be a little bit of a loose cannon, one might say.
Yeah, that War Machine is a loose cannon. So he's not really doing any fighting. He wants to do some knife fights in the Philippines.
And he's doing porn.
Yeah, so of course, porn, a natural progression. He is a lover and a fighter.
Yes, and now his legal name is the War Machine. Because he was sued by, I believe, the WWE over a pro wrestler who was also named War Machine. And,
is it bad that I know who you're talking about? Yeah.
We know who we're talking about.
That is bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not cool.
No pro wrestling references.
What you going to do, brother?
But, yeah, he changed his name to Legally War Machine, so I hope his mom is proud about that one.
Oh, just as proud as the porn film.
Yeah, well, he could hide that one, I guess, unless it turns out to be like Orgasmo, but that is unlikely.
All right, so all this stuff happens, and so then just, was it last Wednesday?
About a week and a half ago or so, he gets in a fight at a porn party. Some girl having a party, and War Machine goes nuts. Started knocking dudes out, trying to get a hold of his manager, who he was mad at because his manager wasn't getting him any work.
And I hear tell that it's kind of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like ninja fight where everyone's going at him one at a time, so he's able to, injure...
Yeah, I think about eight people.
And it was definitely Bruce Lee style, where people attacked him one at a time, instead of just mobbing him. Although, from the last thing, I just read something a little bit ago, getting ready for this podcast right here, and it was about the girl who was throwing the party was actually punching him in the back of the head while he was fighting somebody else, and he was kind of upset about that, because, he considered her his friend, and he didn't mean to ruin her party, it just kind of happened.
We should mention this whole incident at the porn party is, of course, allegedly. According to Nevada officials.
Yes, for and sure. He is currently talking to his lawyer. So I don't know that charges have been pressed yet.
Follow him on Twitter somewhere. Yeah. I guess he's been doing some updates on the lamb.
Yeah, which is great. And I think always good, sound legal defense is to keep posting public statements online about the thing that is ongoing. Probably not the best thing for him to be doing.
One thing that is good news for him, though, is that he is not through with the adult entertainment business. He, in fact, just filmed another scene on the second, so he is still out there.
Still got a job, huh?
Yep. Still making some money.
All right. Well, thanks for hanging with us. We're going to break the audio choke. And here at MMATorch.com.
Nice.
I'm still working on it. MMATorch at Twitter and AudioChoke at Twitter. Leave a comment, do something on the forum. We have our own little thread there on the forum, and we'd love to have some questions, comments, what else?
I am Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
I'm Matt Collins. See you next time.
The Audio Show.
A war of attrition over five rounds.